Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Rurink. A little later, we're going to have Sarah Werfel from Trescott Rossman. We're going to be talking about the John Conyers situation and the difference between him and Al Franken, the accusations against him. But first, joining us now in MERS World Headquarters is Democratic Attorney General candidate Dana Nessel. Thanks for making your way to MERS World Headquarters. Is it as exciting as you thought and hoped it would be?
It's always been my dream, so I'm very appreciative. Thank you.
First quarter of the day.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, tell us how this Attorney General run has been going for you. What's the response that you've been getting, and how do you feel things are going at this point?
Well, I think it's been going great. I'm getting very positive responses. I've been all over the state. Turns out Michigan is very, very big. But I am doing my best to get to every corner of the state of Michigan. And I feel like the responses I've been getting have been really incredible. There are so many people out there that are just clamoring for better representation and very, very excited about the 2018 elections. And, you know, I'm excited to move forward on this, and I'm excited to move forward to the convention.
What are you hearing from residents and voters? What are they telling you they want to see out of you or the Attorney General's office?
Honestly, I think because I've been primarily meeting with Democrats, of course, because in this sort of race, I have to get the nomination from the party, so I'm mostly meeting with people who will either identify as Democrats or who might be attending the Democratic convention. They want a true progressive. They're not looking for a centrist. They're not looking for a Republican light. They want someone who really properly reflects their ideals. And that involves somebody who is very progressive on their policies, their ideals, their thoughts. And I think that I fit into that category, so the response I received as a result has been very positive.
Now, this is going to be a very different race than what we see even on the Republican side, because the Democrats appear to be poised to endorse a candidate in April, and so this really kind of narrows the time frame in which you have to operate. Do you feel like you're under any more of a shot clock, or do you feel the sands are spilling through the hourglass maybe a little quickly than maybe other candidates?
Well, time is going by quickly, and yeah, every new day, that's one less day that you have to meet with your constituency, or at least the people that you believe will, you know, either attend the convention or you can convince to attend the convention on your behalf. But I honestly think it's a great idea that the Democrats are having this endorsement convention in April. I've always subscribed to the philosophy that when we wait until August to assemble our ticket, and frequently what I've seen happen in the past is we have people who no one had ever even considered for a particular office before, and suddenly, boom, they're the Democratic nominee, and it's August, and you have only until the beginning of November now to get people to either know who that candidate is or to see them as a good fit for the office that they're running for. So to me, this was really good strategically for the Democratic Party. I support it. I'm a precinct delegate, and I'm active with the party. And I think it's a good idea for them to have this endorsement convention in April, which presumably, it's not 100%, but presumably it would allow us to know who our nominees are going to be earlier, even if they're not technically nominated by statute until the August convention.
Before you arrived, we were viewing a Facebook ad that you have out, sort of calling out Democrats and pundits that might question that it could be a liability for the Democrats to have an all-female ticket. Talk a little bit about the education process you feel like you have to why do you feel you have to undertake that? And talk about the issue, I guess, a little bit. Why does it deserve an ad right now?
Well, I thought it was important for a variety of reasons, but honestly, the biggest obstacle that I've faced during my campaign so far, it's not that people disagree with my policies. It's not that people have an issue with my experience. It's that I'm a woman, which was shocking to me. And I know, I mean, honestly, it's been so bizarre to me because I really had prepared myself for the fact that I may get a lot of blowback for being the first openly gay person to run for this office or for statewide office at all, really. But I don't hear about that at all. The refrain that I am perpetually hearing and have actually since day one of since I filed is we can't have an all-female ticket for the Democrats. And of course, people are saying that because Gretchen Whitmer is the front runner right now for governor. Jocelyn Benson, she's running unopposed at this point. And that leaves the attorney general. Obviously, there's the lieutenant governor as well, which will be selected by whoever the Democratic nominee is for governor. But in terms of the three main offices, it's what I've been hearing constantly. And to me, what I want to, the message that I want to send to people is that the fact that I'm a woman or the fact that we may end up with an all-female ticket is not a liability, that it's an asset. Women are winning their races all over the country and also in the special elections here in the state of Michigan. They're outperforming their male counterparts. They are out fundraising their male counterparts. And for the first time ever, we've seen women voting for other women and women donating to other women in numbers never before seen. So the message I want to send is having more women on the ticket could actually result in the Democrats having a much better chance come November of 2018.
And you touched on this in this video as well. This kind of goes into what we're seeing out of D.C. also with allegations of sexual harassment. This is something that seems to only be picking up speed and something that professional women and women all over the state and across the country may be experiencing or can relate to.
Right. Well, unfortunately, you know, it's a sad state of affairs that most women you talk to, almost all of them actually, will tell you that at some point in their career, they've been subjected to sexual harassment. And the plain fact of the matter is, can women who are in positions of authority sexually harass people? Of course, there is the possibility always that that can happen. But it's just incredibly unlikely. We've seen example after example. And whether this is in the realm of the political arena, or Hollywood, or journalism, the stories that we're seeing en masse involve male offenders. And I think that what happens is when you have more women in positions of authority, you really just see less sexual harassment. Women are less prone to commit it, and they're less likely to tolerate it in their offices. I mean, that's just a fact of the matter. And I know, having worked in very large offices under men and under women, I can tell you, and I can tell you this having worked for Prosecutor Kim Worthy, believe you me, Kim Worthy would not tolerate sexual harassment in her office. And I think there are a lot of women that when they get into positions of power, that is their attitude. But one of the things I want to say about the state of Michigan in particular is, firstly, only 20% of our state legislature is comprised of women. And I think that's sort of awful. If you look at any sort of studies they do where they say best and worst states to live if you're a woman, Michigan ranks horribly. We're, I believe, number 35 in these rankings when you look at things like median earnings for women, healthcare, homicides of women. And I think that Michigan needs to be a better place for everyone, but it needs to be a better place for over half its population. And I think the best way to do that is to put more women into office and to have equal representation.
What kind of reaction are you getting from various corners of the Democratic Party to that message? And is there attitudes within the party itself that need to change, the party leadership that need to change, that have just become outdated?
Maybe. I mean, I guess that remains to be seen. I still a very positive attitude, and I'm still hopeful that ultimately the party will want, you know, a slate of candidates that has the best chance to win in November and who are the best candidates for their respective offices. So I hope it's not going to be a problem. In terms of the reception I've been getting, that video just came out late last night. So, you know, I hear things across the spectrum. I will say that having worked in criminal law for 25 years, both as a prosecutor and a defense attorney, there are certain words that I guess are not as offensive to me that, you know, may offend others, but at the end of the day...
Like penis?
Like penis, yes. Thank
I've
you,
never
Kyle.
Seen penis in a campaign video before.
Well, there's a first for everything.
There was indeed. I won't forget it.
You know, the fact of the matter is it's an anatomical part of the body.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess I'm not offended by it the way that other people are. But the fact, you know, I was trying to drive home a specific point. And I think that point was aptly made by that video.
I wanted to also address with you this conversation that we're hearing among Democratic circles that we need candidates from Metro Detroit. We need somebody who's maybe from Macomb County. And in particular, we need Eric Smith in this race because he's the kind of person who will generate the votes needed among independents to make sure a Democrat is sitting in this office on January 1, 2019. I want to get your reaction to that.
Yeah, I don't subscribe to this geographic politics. First of all, obviously, it's a statewide race. I don't think that we need to be so focused on winning back the voters from Macomb, as many people, I guess, have suggested. To me, it's about getting as many people out to vote as possible all across the state. And what we know and what we've learned from 2016 is that you need to have candidates that progressives find to be exciting and that drive them out to the polls. And we know, of course, on a non-presidential election year, you're going to have fewer people come out to vote. So more than anything, it's voter turnout, voter turnout, voter turnout. Now, how do you get people to go to the polls? You find exciting candidates that people identify with and that people are excited to go out and vote for. And I don't think that a candidate, just because they happen to reside in a particular county, that doesn't make them a more exciting candidate. And I don't think that's what's going to drive Democratic turnout in 2018.
And possibly, would you make the argument that having an all-female ticket on the Democratic side could be that excitement factor, something that could inject some enthusiasm among progressives and shoot voters across the state?
I definitely think so. I think that it'll actually be a national story. I don't know of any state in the nation, and to be fair, I guess I haven't really checked into this, but I'm not familiar with any state where you have all of the key office holders to be all women. So that may be a first for us nationwide. And if it is, I think it does become a big story. And so you have the microscope a little bit more on the state of Michigan. I think it'll bring in fundraising for the Democratic Party, because I think there are so many women now that are excited and eager to support female candidates that I think we'll get national fundraising at a level that we wouldn't otherwise have. And yes, I think it'll be very exciting. We now see, unlike some of the issues from 2016, we know that an abundance of women, again, voted for women in these last elections in 2017. And I think it's going to drive out the vote, too. I think we're going to see a much greater voter turnout if we did have an all-Democratic slate. And I want to make it clear, I'm not endorsing any particular candidates, but... You know, as somebody who's been sort of a long-suffering feminist in my own right, would I like to see as many women in elected office as possible in our state? Yeah, honestly, I would.
You know, and you kind of touched on this a little earlier in your comments, but you would be, or you are, the first openly gay candidate for a state office that I can think of. But isn't it interesting that that's not what we're talking about? I mean, what does that say? That's just not even anything that's really being brought up at all.
Well, I would say one giant step forward for the gays, one massive step backwards for women.
Hmm.
But honestly, it's true. Almost nobody brings it up. It's strange because I've talked to certain stakeholders in the Democratic Party, and sometimes I actually will bring that up and I'll say, isn't it great I add this diversity to the ticket that we've never had before? And with it, representation of what I believe to be about 500,000 Michiganders that have never had proper representation. And of course, we know that this is an office that traditionally has used the LGBTQ population as a punching bag. How great would it be to have Bill Schuette, one of the biggest homophobes that we've ever seen in office, replaced by an openly gay person? I think that that would be very exciting. But when I talk about it and I share the fact that I know that LGBTQ voters and our close allies, you know, their turnout numbers are spectacular. You look at turnout for LGBTQ people, and, you know, I see between 60 and 80% normally. And I think it's a very high turnout rate. And it's, again, it's a much larger population than I think people know about. But when I bring that up to people, sometimes what I'll hear back is, well, we're not going to hold that against you. And as I hold it against me, why isn't it a good thing? I mean, we are supposed to be the party of diversity. And frankly, one of the reasons that I am a Democrat is because I've always felt accepted in the Democratic Party. And I think that speaks volumes. You know, I've never had a time that I felt like, well, I can't belong to that party. They don't want me as a member. And I'm a proud Democrat. I honestly am. But I hope that people will see this as a boon to the ticket, because so many people, I believe, will come out to vote who maybe ordinarily wouldn't, just because they want to see the first openly gay person put into an office that, again, has traditionally been used to discriminate against them.
You know, it's possible you could be Attorney General and Bill Schuette could be governor. Have you thought of that? You've thought of this. I know you have. How fun would that be?
It would be interesting. It definitely would be. We certainly subscribe to very different philosophies on a myriad of issues.
It'd be fun to cover, wouldn't it, John?
It would make it exciting, yes.
Not like we're endorsing anything. I'm just thinking hypothetically.
But, but from a content generation standpoint, I'll endorse it from that perspective.
There you go. And journalists, that's what we're always thinking about. What makes the most interesting story? Dana Nessel, thanks for joining us at MERS World Headquarters. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Okay, join us now in MERS World Headquarters. John, we've got Sarah Werfel from Trescott Rossman. John, go ahead and take it away.
Sarah, I want to ask you about this Dana Nessel ad. We just had Dana on the show as our guest. The ad obviously starts right out of the gate with her using the word penis. Obviously, she's using this whole controversy with Conyers and Franken and all the rest to sort of point out the difference that maybe it's not a bad thing to have an all-female ticket. What was your takeaway from the ad?
Well, I guess kind of threefold. One, it's certainly colorful. It certainly draws people's attention in. So it's one of those things that actually gains traction, gets viral. I have had the opportunity to work with Dana during the Fair Michigan initial ballot initiative back when, and she is, I think, a tireless and fearless advocate for ending discrimination and also speaking her mind. As somebody who's raising a little girl, I find, you know, kind of this current climate and discussion about what's happening on both simultaneously refreshing and challenging at the same time. I think it's going to resonate with a base and people who are already over there, and I think it probably turns off a lot of other folks. Mm-hmm. And it takes away a little bit of the issue from my perspective.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to move on to the John Conyers discussion. Sarah, I want to get your perception about the differences between the charges and allegations made against Senator Al Franken of Minnesota, the charges and allegations made against John Conyers. Some have made the argument that it's not fair that Conyers is receiving more calls for his resignation than Franken. Is there a difference between these two men and then the allegations that they're facing?
Well, I'd say certainly when you look at the allegations, they're certainly disturbing and certainly disconcerting and disgusting. I think where you see some of the disconnect is also with Congressman Conyers and his longstanding history and record as a fighter for civil rights, and trying to reconcile that with, you know, the information coming out and before. And I think when you look at the allegations, that's before, at least from what I've seen, when Al Franken, before he was a sitting U.S. senator, versus somebody like Congressman Conyers now, where it looks like the vast majority of complainants have been people in his employ who kind of count on their financial security for their families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I agree with you in terms of the employment factor makes a big difference. I think the allegations against Franken make him kind of a creepy predator. I think the fact that Conyers made these assaults on women that were working directly for him kind of makes him, I guess, I would say, uber creepy predator. I don't know if that's too strong, but it's certainly they're disheartening stories, and they have no place in the workplace. But I think that's one of the reasons that you're seeing, you know, Paul Ryan come out so strongly and Nancy Pelosi come out so strongly. They're defending the institution at this point. I don't think Franken's pre-Senate violations are viewed as much of a threat to the institution.
Right. You know, and it's an interesting take. I think the what was unusual and so disturbing about Senator Franken's is that there was actual, like, photographic proof of that, which was something that was an image that was so jarring and so in your face where you see that. But again, circumstances different, and it's hard too, I think, when your family's financial security is tied to that kind of that worry and that paycheck for something where there's vulnerability there. Both vulnerability and both in positions of power, but I think in a different circumstance too.
Mm-hmm. I do think at the end of the day that Conyers is probably gonna resign. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
You know, probably, I think, but it probably might be at the end of the year, and it'll be interesting to see if it's an actual full-on resignation or if it's actually just not running for re-election.
Mm-hmm. You know, to add to that too, guys, the situation here with John Conyers also involves the House leadership being somewhat responsible for what's going on. I mean, remember that these allegations happened 3 years ago when John Conyers was still in office, and it already went through the congressional chain of command. I mean, there was already a settlement that was done. It has already been, I guess, adjudicated in the minds of Congress. So, I mean, they can go ahead and say that he should resign, but why did they say he should have resigned 3 years ago when these when this woman received her $27,000 settlement? See, I think that they are, in a sense, responsible for what's going on now, and now feel like they have to take action. As opposed to Al Franken. I mean, Al Franken, like you said, these accusations with Al Franken happened at a time when he was not in the U.S. Senate. So the U.S. Senate, as an institution, doesn't feel like they have to do anything about it, whereas in the U.S. House, they have some culpability here. They were in charge of a system that not only allowed this $27,000 payout to go out in a very secret way, but they're also in charge of $17 million more in secret payouts to former employees that we have no idea where they came from or whatever happened to the money. I think it's completely different situations in that regard. Sarah, I would like to thank you for coming up here and joining us at MERS World Headquarters. For John Roering, I'm Kyle Malin, editor of the MERS newsletter. Until next week, take care.